From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 22nd day of April, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. It's Earth Day. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett from agmarket.net in Windsor, Illinois. We'll hear a report from Illinois Newsroom's Dana Cronin on how the state is not doing so great as it relates to meeting nutrient loss reduction strategy goals. And Mike Tenor from T-Storm Weather in Chicago will bring us up to date on planting weather for the Midwest and the growing concerns about weather issues for Safrina corn in Brazil. But first, let's hear from crop scientist Emily Heaton. She specializes in biomass crops, and I interviewed her earlier in the week for the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. I asked her to define biomass for me, and on this Earth Day, I think her short answer goes deep into the heart of how humans exist in today's world.
First of all, let's just remember that agriculture produces more than food, right? So in agriculture, our job is to harvest the sun. We take sunlight energy and get it converted with cooperation from plants into forms of carbon that we want to use. So that includes food, but it also includes fuel and fiber. And then increasingly, it just includes stuff. For the last 50 or 100 years, we've been using a lot of stuff made out of fossil fuels. But we're going back to a more contemporary carbon economy. So having biomass crops, that biomass can be used for a variety of purposes.
We call those the four F's of agriculture: food, feed, fuel, and fiber. Agriculture, of course, is a vital link, harvesting sunlight, harnessing its energy, converting it into things humans need and want. Emily Heaton is a professor of regenerative agriculture in the Department of Crop Sciences here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Stay with us. We'll have more in a moment here on this Earth Day edition of the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn settled at $6.50 a bushel, up 25 cents today. July 25 higher at $6.31, and December at $5.53, 16¾ of a cent higher. May beans up 36 cents, settled at $15.33, July at $15.14, 34¾ higher, and November beans at $13.38, up 28 cents. Bean meal futures up $9.70 at $4.22, the bean oil at $2.33, $62.52 was the settlement price. July futures in the soft red winter wheat, 35½ higher at $7.10, and the hard red July settled at $6.74¾, 37 cents higher on the afternoon. Live cattle futures in the April contract were down $1.45 at $118.32½. June there at $115.85, down $1.40. Feeders 285 lower at $132.25 for 100 pounds. In the April, the May at $137.02½, down $257.5. And lean hogs at $107.45 for 100 pounds, down 15 cents on the day. Matt Bennett now joins us from agmarket.net to discuss the trade in Chicago. Hi, Matt. Thanks so much. Is everything just driven by the weather out of South America, and I suppose maybe rainfall here in the United States coming next week?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of things, but there is no doubt that you've got a lot of angst about what's going on in southern Brazil. I know you and I have talked about it several times. No doubt that they're dry. I mean, thank goodness they're not super hot, I guess, for their sake anyway. But bottom line is that you don't have the ability, you know, to have an off crop out of South America. We're just pretty tight here in the U.S. We all know that. And so, you know, you're counting on a lot of exports coming out of the southern hemisphere at this stage of the game. That's up in the air, you know. And then you look at next week for the U.S., large part of the U.S., talking about a fair amount of rain. So maybe the crop isn't going to be in the ground as early, you know, is what everyone thought it was going to be previously. So you tie that to the cash market, which is absolutely on fire. And you can tell that there's a lot of angst, if you will, about sourcing bushels, originating really any sort of protein at all right now.
So what are farmers wanting to do? What should they do? What have you been telling them about the corn market? New crop, old crop, I suppose you're saying, you know, whatever bushels you got, make your decision. But with new crop, it really is about putting money in the bank, I would think.
Absolutely. I mean, what you have to do when it comes to new crop is keep some discipline. You know, we've been trying to tell folks, don't get too sold without keeping flexibility, because, you know, we've been saying that for quite some time. And obviously, at this stage of the game, it certainly looks like that makes more sense, you know. And so why did we want to stay flexible? Because we could see, you know, the potential for some real fireworks. Now, did I think we were going to see the fireworks to this level at this time in the calendar year? I'd be lying if I said that I was. And so we felt like we could see it with summer weather, but we also were assuming that the Safrinha crop would be a decent crop. And so you've got to stay flexible. But when you ask what are farmers wanting to do, well, let's be honest about it. Right now, a lot of farmers I know want to get long the board and make money. And it's because the markets are going up every day. But we got to be super cautious as to do something like that. I'm not saying that, you know, a person can't do a little gambling if they want to, but just be very careful, in my opinion. You know, as a producer, we don't want to lose sight of the type of profit margins, the type of tightness we've seen over the last 6 or 7 years. I want to see us be more of a risk management mindset than a speculative one.
So when you're managing the risk, I know you've done a couple of things. We've talked about it on the air. Crop insurance there is a primary risk management tool. You took full advantage of that to 95%, if I remember correctly. And are there other things that you've done to protect sales that you've made?
Yeah, and so whenever we were making sales early on, I mean, just in total transparency, we made our first 10% sale at, I don't know, I'm going to say 405 or 410, but we were actually buying May short dated 430 calls at the time. I was just looking that over earlier, and you know, we just thought that it made sense for our operation just in case this market got carried away and went to the upside. And of course, that turned out fairly well. Now, what we've been telling producers is that at these price levels, when you're above $5, I don't see a reason to keep flexibility on maybe the first 25 or 30%, given the fact that, especially in our part of the world, we got to feel pretty confident, especially if you're buying crop insurance. You've got bushels to sell, at least to that level, safely. And so I think once you get over 25 to 30%, though, you have to keep the mentality that if you're making sales, you're going to go ahead and have a call out there. Now, we've been buying calls maybe 50 cents above the market, because my thought is that if the market goes up 50 cents, and that's all it goes up from here, you know, then I'm probably going to be able to have raised a crop. If it goes up $2 or $3, then there's no question that all of us might be in danger of having not raised a crop. And in that scenario, you certainly don't want to miss that kind of a rally.
What about the bean market? Because it rallied sharply today too.
Yeah. Incredible thing is that we settled, you know, 35, 36 cents higher, a dime off the highs, you know, so we were running almost 50 cents higher at one time. This bean market is certainly, you know, a runaway train at this stage of the game. In fact, you know, I knew some producers that were holding on to some of their May bean calls a few days ago that thought, you know, they'd just go ahead and liquidate them for 4 or 5 cents. You know, what's it going to hurt you to hold on to them? Well, look at it now, you know. I wish maybe they would spread the wealth a little bit too, because now you're now you're looking at a call that a week ago was worth a nickel's worth $1.20. It's just incredible to see the kind of move we've seen. But you can't blame that on Safrinha crop weather. You know, that's something totally different where that is driving this bean market. I think it's a combination, you know, of some of the technicals. No question that this U.S. situation is a well-defined one. We've known that we were super tight for a long time. And we also know there's a fair amount of beans coming out of the Southern Hemisphere. I think it's just a matter of total protein grab. And whenever you look at what China is doing as far as expanding the pork production, there's no doubt that their needs for feed going forward are going to remain robust.
Okay, so a couple of things. Because if the weather turns, whether that's here in the United States and or in South America, but let's just say that the weather turns and planters begin to run in the United States, how far and how fast does the market drop, and do producers do any sales on the way down?
I think that whether you're selling on the way up or on the way down, You always have to run the numbers of what it works for you. I know before you and I came on the air, you said you were running numbers for your own operation, and you got to know, what's 5 1/4 mean for your farm? And if you tell me that you can't make money at 5 1/4, we got bigger issues than you and I can solve today. But as a producer's standpoint, what kind of downside is there, with a change in weather? So let's just say that we come in and over the weekend, South America gets a big rain they weren't expecting, and the forecast has turned. I think you take 50 cents out of this corn market pretty quick. And of course, if you take that kind of a chunk out of the corn market, you're going to see the bean market potentially slide a dollar. Now, at this stage of the game, you're gumming up on the dry season. It begins officially May the 1st. Now, we know that weather's a crazy anomaly half the time, but we understand that if they go into dry season dry, they're going to be really hard pressed to catch rain. So, no doubt that there's a heck of a lot of downside if we change the forecast, but right now, I guess I don't have a whole lot of confidence that's going to change.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, absolutely. Thanks, Todd.
You bet. That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He's with agmarket.net. He's right. I was running the numbers just before we came on the air, and if I made another 10% sale today, it would jump my average cash sale by 27 cents a bushel. It's Earth Day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world online at willag.org, willag.org. Up next, Dana Cronin from the Illinois Newsroom, agricultural reporter, has an update on where the state stands as it relates to the nutrient loss reduction strategy.
A tile drainage pipe ushers runoff from a central Illinois farm into the East Branch Embra River. This water will flow through the Wabash, Ohio, and Mississippi rivers before ending up in the Gulf of Mexico. Nitrogen and phosphorus levels will build as the water passes through more and more fertilizer-laden farmland, which, after nourishing crops, results in a dead zone off the coast of Texas and Louisiana.
So this is cereal rye.
Joe Rothermel's farm partially drains into that East Branch Embra River. Of his 1,100-acre corn and soybean operation, he plants cover crops on 800 of those acres.
Very good for suppressing weeds, holding in moisture.
By preventing soil erosion, cover crops help reduce Rothermel's pollution into the river. But despite his and other farmers' efforts, agriculture is still the largest contributor to nutrient runoff, which is why many Mississippi River Basin states have adopted plans to reduce their impact on the Gulf's dead zone, including Illinois. The basic goal of Illinois' nutrient loss reduction strategy is to cut nitrogen and phosphorus loads almost in half. More immediately, the aim is to reduce nitrogen by 15% and phosphorus by 25% in the next 4 years. But so far, it's not working. In fact, the situation is getting worse.
Unfortunately, right now, no. We're actually going the other way.
Trevor Sample is with Illinois' Environmental Protection Agency and coordinates the nutrient loss reduction strategy. He says between 2015 and 2019, nitrogen and phosphorus loads have increased by 13 and 37%, respectively, compared to the baseline numbers.
And a lot of that is because we're seeing increases in flows.
The massive amount of rain in 2019 meant that more water flowed into rivers, 25% more, to be exact. And with that increased flow comes increased nutrients. But there are other reasons Illinois hasn't yet improved its water quality, including a lack of money. By comparison, Iowa has dedicated $270 million to improving water quality. Jennifer Jones does watershed outreach with University of Illinois Extension. She says that money makes a big difference.
Whenever you look at Iowa, for example, it's just incredible to see the work that we've been able to do in Illinois without assistance from, maybe the state level as much.
While Illinois does fund some conservation programs, there's currently no state money going directly to reducing nutrient runoff. Right now, the state is mostly relying on education. And that's what makes Jones's job so important. She helps make a podcast dedicated to the issue.
This is the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast, Episode 25, Uncovering the Benefits of Cover Crops.
The podcast covers everything from the benefits of constructed wetlands to which cover crops to plant. More resources like this are needed, says Michael Woods, who manages the Illinois Department of Agriculture's Natural Resources Division. A recent Illinois State University survey found that fewer than half of Illinois farmers had even heard of the strategy.
The success of this initiative and the success of protecting our environment while sustaining our agricultural operations really comes down to education.
Joe Rothermel, the Central Illinois farmer, thinks it will also take financial incentives and technological advances. And he says we can't leave all of that up to farmers.
Conservation is not free. And farmers, you know, are going to have to pay for this themselves, or somebody else is going to have to pay or help pay. And I'm not sure it should be totally on the, you know, the farmer.
Rothermel says he's hopeful the new Biden administration will contribute federal dollars to conservation programs, including programs aimed at cutting down on farm runoff. I'm Dana Cronin, Illinois Newsroom.
On this Thursday, let's check in with Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us today.
Great being here, Todd. Thank you.
Let's start in South America. Brazil's second crop corn has been under some weather stress. It's been helping to drive the market higher. What do you see there?
Well, there's just not much rain in the forecast. They've been bone dry for a while, and we're talking about the time frame here that goes back pretty far into the past. I mean, some of these areas of Brazil have not seen rain for more than 30 days, and the forecast is not very promising. So that's going to be a story that we're going to have to deal with for a while. And unfortunately, the story in a lot of ways is probably over, because there's not much rain in the forecast over the next 10 days. There is a little bit on the horizon, 11 to 14 days out, but you just can't go 6-7 weeks without much rain and not expect to have some problems. So the next thing we'll watch is that rain event around May 3rd, 4th, and 5th in Brazil. But once we get there, it's just probably an old story by then. So this is a big deal.
It's a big deal, and it affects a large part of the crop. Is there any area there that seems to be in better condition than not?
Well, certainly in western and northern growing areas of Mato Grosso. And Mato Grosso is the number one corn-producing state in Brazil. So it's certainly the one you would want to turn wet if you need to have a big corn crop. But the problem is that that area we're talking about only accounts for about 25, 30, maybe 35% of the total corn crop. The rest of it has just not been receiving very much rain. And again, it's the most pronounced in those southern growing areas, the Paraná, Mato Grosso do Sul, and Sao Paulo. And that's about 40% of the crop, and it's just not been receiving much rain for a long time, so it more or less counters any of the good conditions that we're seeing in parts of Mato Grosso.
Just to double check on something, is this part and parcel of the late corn planting, or is the dry weather earlier in the year, meaning did it come earlier in the year than expected, and has that been an issue?
Well, it certainly has arrived earlier than expected, because that southern third to half of the growing belt basically receives rain all year round. It might not rain heavily all year, but it does rain pretty much all weeks of the year. And they've more or less moved into a drought. It just stopped raining about 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago. And that's kind of where the problem started. Now, in the northern areas, they can receive pretty significant rainfall all the way through the month of April. But then once we get into May, this is the dry season that often starts between the 1st and the 15th. Well, it's essentially started about a week or two early, putting it at around April 15th to 20th. And then now we move into the dry season in May, where you don't expect to receive much rain, if any rain, but a lot of these areas receive no rainfall from mid-May through mid-September. So in there, it's more of a early start to the dry season as opposed to a drought. But no matter how you stack it up, it's just not the scenario you needed. You needed to have a lot of rain in southern Brazil. You needed to have a late start to the dry season. And instead, it didn't rain in southern Brazil, and we had an early start to the dry season, more than likely.
What's your assessment here in the United States of weather conditions going forward and how corn planting, soybean planting, can continue across the Midwest?
Well, the big concern at the moment has been all of the cold weather, because we've had temperatures near freezing on several mornings lately. High temperatures were way below normal. But that's going to be an old story here pretty soon, because once we get into the weekend and next week, it will be way warmer. We'll see high temperatures in the 70s and 80s, even across much of Illinois by early next week. Now, it's not going to stay that warm for a long period of time, but the more important thing to note is that we're not going to move back into this unusual cold spell that we're seeing now. So pretty much the cold story is going to end. But as you know, at this time of the year, a lot of the times when you get warmer, that allows humidity levels to increase as we start to tap the Gulf of Mexico and pull in some of that tropical air. And that's certainly going to be the case. We'll see a big increase in humidities, and then we're going to add in some storm systems, and that combination is going to turn the central U.S. quite a bit wetter. Now, we don't think this is going to turn into a situation like we had 2 years ago where it keeps on raining and raining and raining, but it is going to rain here and there, and some areas will receive some heavy totals. The most likely area for heavy totals would be from central Illinois on to the south through the mid-south region of Arkansas, Tennessee, and into Mississippi and Louisiana. So that's also the area where planting typically begins first, and so we're turning them the wettest first. And that rain event, or at least the rain events, begin as early as Friday and Saturday. So just basically turning a lot warmer, but also turning wetter. Maybe not crazy amounts of rain coming up, but not the ideally dry scenario you would like for the month of May to plant a big corn and soybean crop.
Turn your attention to the Northwest then, of the Corn Belt, that is. What are your thoughts about spring wheat there?
Well, South Dakota has broken out of the drought over the last couple of months, so the story there is not as impressive as it was. But as you move into North Dakota, which is where most of the spring wheat crop is produced, we're still certainly in a drought, even despite some of the rain that we saw a couple of weeks ago. As we move forward, it is going to also turn wetter in the northern plains, and that's because of this warmer weather pattern. So with the warmth comes the rain, and we think that it will turn wetter as we move into next week and even beyond then. So the planting story for spring wheat is probably going to be one in where we were a little bit too dry, and there were some concerns initially about whether or not we could plant. At this point, it looks like we're going to start to see enough rain that it should help to get the spring wheat crop planted. But then the next story will be, are the rains going to continue? Because we need them to continue given the longevity of the drought that we're dealing with. That's still several weeks out to be too worried about. I think the point I'd like everybody to take home with them is that spring wheat crop is going to turn a little bit wetter going forward, and more than likely that will help with planting more than hinder it.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd. Let's talk next week.
Indeed we will. That's Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. Don't forget, you can always find Commodity Week there, usually by about 6 o'clock on Thursday evening, maybe slightly later than that tonight. But we'll post it there with our panelists this week, including Merrill Crowley of AgTraderTalk.com and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, along with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. Commodity Week, online tonight after 6 o'clock and on many of these radio stations over the weekend. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.